The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Professor David Alexander works in the Department of Risk and Disaster Reduction at University College London, and he's with us to discuss the cause and response to the LA wildfires. Fires, of course, raging now, claimed at least 11 lives. They forced the evacuation of 179,000 residents from their homes. More than 10,000 buildings have been destroyed. And LA County has just issued a general public health warning because of the impact of smoke and ash across the entire city of LA. David, good morning.
Morning to you.
David, there's been a lot of discussion, first of all, in respect of the cause. We know that they are investigating whether or not it is arson that was the spark that started the conflagration. But the context for the conflagration to occur, how much of it do you attribute to climate change, and how much of it do you attribute to the management or mismanagement of things like reservoirs and forestry?
Okay, in this area, before humans came along, the recurrence interval of fires was about 70 years, fires that are large and widespread. Now they are 2 years instead of 70, and that tells you something about human habitation. The three things a wildfire needs are heat, oxygen, and fuel. The fuel comes from trees, bushes, undergrowth, vegetation debris, and increasingly houses and buildings. The oxygen comes from these dry Santana winds that come off the center of the continent, and the heat, well, it's California, it's a warm area, Mediterranean climate. So it is a place that is susceptible to fire, but what they need to do is very much more in terms of restricting the opportunity for fires to move, especially through urban areas. In the Palisades fire alone, you've got 80 square kilometres burnt, and a decent portion of that is unfortunately urban.
Is there much that you can do, though? Because if you have the Santa Ana winds and you have a tinder dry environment, it can whip embers through the entire area with a rapidity that I would have thought gets ahead of much in the way of any response.
Right. It causes spot fires, and they can rapidly increase in size. And indeed, there is always a risk that firefighters are going to get surrounded by them. But let's remember, in August 1970, there was a situation a bit like this. And California had 193 simultaneous fires around the state. It was absolute chaos. So afterwards, they founded something called California Fire Scope, which is a means of making the response local, modular, and well-coordinated. And that was so successful that it became part of the national system of incident management for the whole of the US. And, they've got that under control. There are things they could do to fireproof properties, to create more fire breaks, to have better available sources of water, although we have to remember that they're in a drought since last May, which is problematic, and to improve their coordination. I think in future they're going to need twice as many firefighters as they've got now. There are 7,500 in the field. They're going to need 15,000 in the future. Climate change has also done this. Temperatures are higher, droughts are longer. Let's also remember that when all of this is over, they're going to have rains, and they'll probably have an increased incidence of landslides, especially along the coast.
Can we talk a little bit about the economic and societal legacy of this? Because one of the things that we're seeing in natural disaster areas around the US is serious challenges in insurability. If you look at a lot of the areas where there has been significant hurricane damage, you come to a point where properties in some areas are uninsurable. If they're uninsurable, they're unmortgageable. If they're unmortgageable, in large part, they're unbuildable, and you see a collapse of the property market. Are we going to see the same in California, where insurance companies take a look at Pacific Palisades or anywhere else and say it's not worth getting involved in that market?
I think the answer is yes and no. In other words, to a very limited extent, insurance companies have been pulling out of California regarding natural hazards since 2018, if not before. There is an insurance scheme of last resort, which is run by the state, rather like the US National Flood Insurance Scheme, it essentially relies on private insurers underwritten by the state as a reinsurer. They probably will squeak through this despite having massive payouts involved in it. The question is, can they keep it afloat in the future? Because this is not the end of the story. This is not the last event of its kind. Here we've got this vast area with 11 million people in it. California, well, Los Angeles has been described as 25 suburbs in search of a city. This is a vast area that can very easily get burnt, and there can very easily be very large losses. Same problem for earthquakes as well. So the economic side of this is, in fact, very, very difficult, and they're going to have to think long and hard about this. And it needs much more of a collective effort economically to get this under control.
Now, in relation to that collective effort, I would have thought also it is an interesting ideological context and policy context, because the kind of actions that you're describing about, like state underwriting of private insurance, is a fairly socialist policy, which is anathema to much of what we're seeing the new administration wanting to do. And a lot of the response is rooted in an acceptance of the impact of climate change, which again runs counter to most of the thinking of the incoming administration.
That is true. And indeed, that might well mean that the whole problem is not brought under control. I am not overly optimistic about that. If you take the National Flood Insurance Program, flood losses are potentially enormous. Indeed, they are enormous in the US, and they're everywhere and they're very frequent. In the 1930s, a number of insurance companies went bust as a result of three large floods in 5 years. These are 100-year floods, but 100-year flood is a really notional sort of idea. So in the end, the state, the federal government had to step in. There's been a constant barrage of criticism of the National Flood Insurance Program, but it is absolutely essential, or communities would simply die. So this is going to have to happen in California. They've been grappling with the earthquake insurance problem for a long, long time, and they haven't really got that fully solved either.
In terms of then risk mitigation, if when the rebuilding starts, one of the things that we saw, and it's not fully comparable, but there are similarities. When Hurricane Andrew devastated the Homestead area of Florida, it led to the Miami-Dade Building Code, which significantly changed how buildings were built in hurricane areas. Are we going to have to see something like that now in California, where a code comes in to say radically different approach to building to be better able to deal with wildfires?
Well, whether we're going to see it or not is a political question. And at this point in time, as we watch the political complexion change, is hard to say. I would say it is absolutely necessary. You can build houses with fireproof roofs. That is helpful. It isn't a panacea. It won't solve all problems, but it helps. You can have vegetation management around houses. You can improve the response capability, although you have to invest a lot of money in that. Are they going to do it or are they not? Time will tell.
Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, your day job is professor of in the Department of Risk and Disaster Reduction at University College London. Without naming names, as you look at what we have seen over the last week, do you see a failure in relation to how risk planning was handled and disaster reduction was handled in the run-up to this?
I see a failure all over the world. I'm also professor of the same things in Japan. I have two appointments parallel. The Japanese generally do things very well, and they're also very willing to listen, which is most helpful. Willing to listen at all levels of government, among other things. And they are in a program of constant improvement. The US has lost the lead in this. It is a very individualistic sort of country. Rugged individualism tends to prevail, where we need a much more collective sort of response. If democracy is under threat in the US or any other country, this is not helpful either, because we need people to have information and correct information, to have the inducement to act on it, the ability to act on it, and the structures to act on it in favor of greater security and safety.
And is it your belief that it was ever thus, that it has always been this kind of, because I think back to, I mean, oddly, some of the water that is now being sourced to deal with this comes from Depression era infrastructure projects that were in part designed to create employment in a sort of a semi-socialist way. Has that changed, or is that just American characteristics coming home to roost?
Well, I find it a little easier to look at that in terms of things like the energy companies, and they are very much private. And if you take the example of Texas, they had a couple of years ago winter storm in which it just simply proved that the electricity distribution network was in no way winterized. It was much a question of profit over security in that. A reluctance to legislate in such a way that the electricity companies would be forced to make their supply more resilient. That is a complex problem. It's not a simple black and white issue, but nevertheless, there are elements of this in California too.
Lastly, as you look at reports emerging this morning, because we still have, I think, five or six separate fires all across the broader county area still raging, and the authorities now saying that the air quality has been degraded to a degree that everybody is at health risk by virtue of the smoke and ash. Are you optimistic in terms of authorities' capacity to get on top of it as we now stand?
Well, in the end, this is going to burn its way out one way or the other. I'm concerned about Monday when it is forecast that there'll be yet more fire weather conditions. In other words, high winds, heat, drought, and all the rest of it to propagate fires that will still be burning by then. Nevertheless, there comes a time when the fuel is consumed, the weather conditions change so that fire can more easily be brought under control. A significant question is how much they will be able to achieve before weather conditions do go back to how they were before, if that is what is going to happen. In the end, all of this will peter out. How long that will take is anybody's guess, according to what the weather does and whether they can get the response to the point where it starts to overcome the spread of fires, bearing in mind that containment has proved to be very difficult in these days.
David, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's Professor David Alexander from the Department for Risk and Disaster Reduction at University College London.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.